800-333-3333.
Welcome to Midday here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Today we're broadcasting live from the Rotunda, the Minnesota State Capitol, where the rush to adjournment is in high gear. Basically, it's come time to vote, time to decide how Minnesotans' money will be spent and what it will be spent on. Minnesota legislators have reached agreement on a number of important issues, taxes, education, funding, transportation among them. And they're said to be close to agreement on several other major issues, but conference committee members are still trying to work out the details of a huge catch-all social service spending bill. And I guess they're close now to an agreement on the capital improvements borrowing bill. We'll find out more about all of those issues today on Midday. We've been joined today by Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, Mike Mulcahy. And today on Midday, we'll be talking with some of the key legislators who've been working on all these issues. We'll try to shed some light on what's in those big bills and what it means for Minnesota taxpayers. So settle back. Glad you could tune in and hope you can stick with us right on through till 1 o'clock this afternoon. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Gary. Glad to be anywhere today. We're almost done.
Well, you know, people don't look too bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I guess they've been working pretty hard.
Well, a lot of the legislators here certainly have. I think they reached a deal on the education bill at about 4:30 this morning, 4 o'clock this morning. They worked out an agreement on the numbers on that bonding bill at about 5:30 this morning. And actually, the tax committee finished fairly early, as did the transportation conference committee last night. So they should be ready to go. They should be ready to debate today.
Okay, walk us through this for those who aren't all that familiar with the legislative process. The House passes a bill, Senate passes a bill, then they send representatives to these conference committees, and
right.
They put the two bills together, and then they come up for votes, right?
Right. And when the bills come back from the conference committee, then the House or the Senate, they can't amend it anymore. It's either an up or down vote, or they could send it back to the conference committee. What we're hearing from leadership like Ron Abrams, the tax committee chair, is that these bills will be very popular on the House and Senate floors, that there will be more than enough votes to pass and more than enough votes to override if the governor chooses to veto any of these bills. And now they're going to try to get it all done today, they say. And today, though, in terms of a legislative day, means they can get it done until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. So it probably will be a late night tonight, and they'll finish this, who knows, sometime in the early morning maybe, and then the plan is to come back one day next week, if they have to override any vetoes, and then at that point they would actually adjourn the session.
So today, for the most part, legislators will be debating what's in the bills and then voting on them.
Right, and they're probably also will be taking a lot of recesses because they won't be ready to go, or they'll try to be working some things out, or Senator Moe in the Senate told us this morning that he wanted to be sure that the House was really committed to passing all these bills before he was going to start debating the major bills, because he wants to get it all done today. So there'll be some of that, too, if people are watching on TV at home and they're wondering why the House or Senate isn't meeting.
And if they don't finish their work today or overnight, tomorrow morning, early tomorrow morning, then what happens?
Well, that's a good question, because we do know that there's at least one other day they have that they can use to pass bills over and above the day they're going to come back to do those veto overrides. And then they would have one other day, which would be the last day they're legally allowed to meet by the Constitution, when they couldn't pass any bills. But at least up until now, that they've been sitting kind of tight on that one extra day and not letting many people know that they have that authority to meet and to do stuff. So they're really going to push to try to get it done today.
Well, we are going to be talking for the next couple of hours with many of the key legislators who've been working on all these big pieces of legislation. And I suppose nothing is of more interest to people than taxes. And joining us here at the broadcast table is the chair of the House Tax Committee, Ron Abrams. Good morning, Mr. Abrams.
Good to see you again, Gary.
You look pretty good. Of course, Mike said you got your work done a little earlier than some of the others.
Senator Johnson and I took out all of the non-money items. We essentially completed those items 3 weeks ago. And the money items we had discussed in general terms, and the rebate we had discussed in general terms. It was just a question of getting targets and being able to put it together. And Senator Johnson and I are friends of long standing. There's no need to engage in much posturing, and We both had an interest in getting our work done and in doing it in a professional and efficient manner.
Okay, so we're going to get a tax rebate again this year.
Yes, and that number, according to staff this morning, is a $658 million rebate total between farm and sales.
$658, and there are more people eligible this year than for last year's rebate?
Yes. Last year, I felt strongly about what I call the Social Security cluster of recipients. That's not only people who are on the elderly, but it's also the disabled and railroad retirees. The federal government would not make that tape available so that the rebate could not be automatic to people who did not have income tax liability. In the last year, they have found a way in which to make those tapes available, so the Social Security folks will be taken care of. And then there's the dependent issue that came up over the past year. And we all felt very strongly if there's a way to do that automatically, they ought to be included if they had some income tax liability. Mm-hmm. And then there are some others who touch the income tax system, like people who apply for the working family credit, the working poor. And once we found an automatic way to be able to include that group of people, it seemed to make sense to do it. What our concern was is that we don't believe in retroactive rebates. What's done is done, and let's not tear that asunder. But we didn't want to be churning out millions of dollars of administrative costs with an application process. While we are, you know, pleased that we found an automatic way to do it, there's all for some of these other groups, there's also, I believe, great value in recognizing that these people also did pay sales taxes. So we were able to strike a pretty good compromise there.
And for people who got a check last year, they roughly this year will be about half as big.
You know, a little less than half. So, you know, last year it was almost $1.3 billion. This year it's $658, but that includes about $18 million in the farm piece and a little bit of late returns. So there's about $635 million and change available. The eligibility is a little bit greater. So, you know, 45 to 50% of last year's check is what I would be expecting.
Now, over and above the tax rebate, you folks have also included now a permanent income tax cut. Everybody, all three brackets, will be reduced a little bit, a little tiny bit this year, right?
Well, it's not tiny if it's your money, Gary, and that's our philosophy, is that it's not the government's money, it's the people's money, and it will be cutting the rates by 0.15 at the bottom rate, which will make that rate 5.35, 0.20 in the middle rate, which will make that rate 7.05, and 0.15 at the top, which will make the top rate 7.85.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, you had wanted to cut taxes deeper than that this year, and why is it so important for the House Republicans to cut the income tax rates?
Well, when you look at the tax system, I'm interested in making Minnesota more competitive in the regional, national, and international economy. And our income tax sticks out like a sore thumb. We are fourth most per capita income taxes in the country. There are income earners who are, in a family basis, are in the seventh or eighth highest in the country. And my concern is that the economy in Minnesota is going real good now, but we want those jobs to come to Minnesota because we want Minnesota to grow good, high-paying jobs, and we cannot have tax disadvantages against our competitors. So you know, we view this as a process. My goal is to get Minnesota out of the top 10 in all tax categories. We took a big chomp last year. We took a smaller chomp this year. And if the voters are kind to us in November and bring us back, we're gonna keep on doing it as diligently, as professionally, as relentlessly as we possibly can.
Now, another thing that people are going to notice is that their license tab fees will start going down 2 years from now, right?
No, they'll go down they'll go down now when you reapply for your motor vehicle tabs after July 1st. But the governor's $99 cap will not be in effect until year three of ownership of a motor vehicle. So if you're going out and buying a car this weekend, don't count on the $99 tab fee until year three that you own that machine.
In fact, it'll be the same this year as it would have been under current law, and then it goes down a little bit next year, and then the third year you own the car, you get the big cut, assuming
exactly.
You have an expensive car.
Exactly. In year two, I believe the maximum fee is $189.
Right.
Legislators were less than enthused about cutting the license tab fees. You had other plans, and until This one-third, one-third, one-third budget arrangement was reached. It looked like the license tab fees were in some trouble. Why were you opposed to that?
Because I have yet to meet the person who said, you know something, I'm moving from Minnesota because of those license tab fees. And I've yet to hear an employer say, you know, I could have recruited that great guy to be our new vice president of marketing. He was okay with the property taxes he was going to pay in his home. He was okay with the income taxes. But when he found out about our license tab fees, which are 23rd in the nation, he decided to stay in North Carolina or whatever. You know, that just doesn't take place. This is bread and circuses. It is publicity. It is economically inefficient. And but so be it. Anytime there's a tax cut, that's good news. I guess we will be one of the lowest states in the country in license tab fees, and you know, we'll probably change our state slogan from Le Trois de Nord to cheap license tabs or something like that.
Mr. Chairman, what about the whole one-third, one-third, one-third? You are not a fan of that arrangement to get out of the session.
I would make two points. I happen to be in favor of unicameral. But the one-third, one-third, one-third was unilateral. And we have a constitutional system of checks and balances. And once you delegate or abrogate your constitutional responsibility, these are some of the results that you'll get. And I would point out that while the DFL Senate and the Republican House have honest disagreements about priorities, I would say that the Senate that spent the 175, we may disagree with the amount, but they were somewhat sensitive in not sticking it to the Republicans. And I would suspect that if you had a candid conversation with Senator Johnson and some of the other in the state Senate on the DFL side, they would say that the House tax cut plan had a lot of elements in it that showed fairness and sensitivities to the needs of all the members of the institution in all areas of the state. And we could have put together a highly controversial plan that wouldn't be there. But the Governor Ventura, during his wrestling days, he was normally called a heel and a bad guy. He basically went around violating all the rules. And, I would point this out. For a guy who has run around the state and grabbed the bully pulpit on the unicameral issue and has derided conference committees, the biggest abuse of conference committees I've seen in my 12 years here was this year, and the biggest abuser was the governor.
And that is this busway, the transit money that he's put in at the last minute into the bonding bill?
Absolutely. He has, I think that, you know, I don't know how the bonding bill is going to get off the House floor. I don't know how the Speaker is intending to go about it. It certainly wasn't intended. It certainly wasn't part of a conversation that the Speaker had with the governor before the deal was cut. I would point out that some of these provisions were not in either the House bills or the Senate bills that passed either body. But for a guy who wants a unicameral system, and I agree with him on this, this is the biggest abuse of the conference committee process I've seen in 12 years here.
Overall, Representative Abrams, you mentioned Senate tax chair Doug Johnson. He apparently, when he voted for the tax bill, had to hold his nose to do so. He argues that when you take all of these provisions together in the tax bill, it benefits wealthy people too much. Is he on to something here?
You know, I would disagree with that. There's a certain philosophy. And I don't know if Senator Johnson adheres to it or not. It's basically the John Marty philosophy, the philosophy that was repudiated by over 70% of the voters of the state of Minnesota, or close to 70% of the voters in 1994, which is that everybody ought to get numerically the same tax cut. I believe that the more you pay in, if you're going to have a tax cut, the more your taxes ought to be cut. When you take a look at the distribution of our income tax cut, proportionally the less well-to-do benefit a little bit more than the well-to-do on a percentage basis. But when you have a $10,000 liability, and you get about a 2% tax cut, that's $200. But if you have a $1,000 liability, but you get a 4% tax cut, that's $40. I would say that's a progressive tax cut because on a proportional basis, the lower income people are getting a proportionally bigger cut than the higher income people, but the higher income people are paying so much in taxes that it appears to be greater. On the license tap fees, the Department of Revenue has been working diligently to try to get a good income distribution on that, and under the data set that they sent over, according to our nonpartisan staff, there are a lot of problems with it. One of the problems you have is dependents who may make just enough money to file an income tax return. They may make $5,000, $6,000, but dad and mom have given their young charge a new car for high school graduation or whatever, so they may have a $300 license tab fee obligation. But on the distribution, it will show that somebody that under $9,900 is getting a $300 tax cut under the governor's plan. But I normally want to think of these as families. And, you know, I do believe that Senator Johnson is right, that there were other ways to do the license tab fees that would have been fairer. And you know, frankly, I would, you know, I don't want to speculate too much, but I would think that Senator Johnson might find the license tab fee proposal more offensive than anything the House Republicans did in the tax bill.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We'll look for the rebate checks in late August.
Sometime in August is the current scheme where we're having staff work with the Department of Revenue on some technical issues on that.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us. Ron Abrams from Minnetonka, who is the chair of the Minnesota House Tax Committee, and Mike Mulcahy, under the agreement that was reached, Mr. Abrams essentially wrote this year's tax bill. Normally, there's a good deal more give and take than with the Senate.
As he said, they compromised on a number of language things before they even made that three-way split. But he did get to spend about $160 million of that $175 million on that income tax cut, and that was certainly something the Republicans were looking for all session. They had hoped that it would be a bigger cut. They originally came in with an $850 million cut, and that led to a lot of the early tension over that amount of the ongoing surplus. The $549 million that they argued about so long was really essentially about the size of the Republican tax cut, and so they did what they could with what they had, which was the one-third, one-third, one-third.
Now, you mentioned while we were talking to Representative Abrams the bonding bill, and I don't want to get into the details of that yet. We'll get to that in a moment. But very briefly, they breached. What's the status on that bill now? That was the whole point of having this session, of course.
Well, as of a few minutes ago, they were still working out a few last-minute language items, but they'd reached agreement on all the numbers and some of the highlights, I guess. Full $58 million funding for that Bureau of Criminal Apprehension building. They did come up with some money for the art building over at the U of M, I think $18.5 million. That was a contentious one. They came up with $3 million in cash for the Guthrie Theater, and then a lot of money for higher education, preserving assets. It's a $450 million total on bonding and another $89 million on cash. And then there was that issue of the busway and transit that the governor wanted to get in there, which was a whole other issue.
If you're just tuning in, we're broadcasting live today from the Minnesota State Capitol. We're in the Capitol Rotunda on what could be the last day, last real working day of the Minnesota legislative session. Conference committees have worked out the bills, and now the House and the Senate are going to be voting on those big bills. Joining us now is Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. Senator Moe, good morning to you.
Good morning. Nice to be with you. I needed my weekly fix on your programs.
That's true. That's true. You'll be continuing the broadcast, I suppose, after the session is over.
Of course.
Is the train running on schedule?
No, we can't say it's running on schedule, but it is running. It's going to get to its destination eventually, but it's probably going to be into the a.m. hours tomorrow morning before we get the. Right now, it's kind of a mechanical process of getting the revisers to input the agreed upon language, and then the printing and all of that takes a while. So we'll be in and out of session throughout the day and into the evening.
For people who don't follow the process that closely, why is it so important that you get all your work done today or overnight rather than do some of it today and finish up tomorrow?
The strategy that the speaker and I discussed has to do with an override, potential override of the vetoes, if there are vetoes. We are now on the 117th legislative day, and anything that passes on the 118th or 119th legislative day, the governor is not bound by the three-day limit.
Oh.
So the reason we're going to pass the budget bills today, and then we're going to recess until the following Wednesday, and that will give the legislature time to get the bills processed, the final pieces processed that were passed and submitted to the administration, and then they will get 3 days to make a decision on them. So then we would have the opportunity, if need be, for veto overrides.
Do you think realistically the governor is going to veto any of these big bills?
That remains to be seen, but that's just one part. There are also provisions, line item provisions, that we may want to take a look at as well. So we're just leaving that particular option open to us by doing it this way.
Senator, what would you say is the level of trust between the Senate DFL and the governor right now? I know the Republicans have had a couple run-ins with the governor, and it seems to be a little bit better between you and the governor in terms of the things that he's proposed and you've accepted and back and forth.
Yeah, there's not a question of trust. We've not had any disagreements. We've had some legislative and policy disagreements, but it's not an issue of trust. We've worked with the administration and have some differences on occasion, but I can't say that we don't trust what they say or anything like that. That's not the issue.
I just can't think of when the legislature has planned to override vetoes with the previous governor. I guess this governor doesn't have any votes, and that makes it easier to do, but should we read anything into that?
I think it's a combination of two things. The results of last session, when there were vetoes and members thought that maybe the agreement that was worked out was kind of an implied part of the overall global budget deal. That's one part. The other is that I think it's because we've invested so much in this session that we're just not going to let the opportunity slip by us by virtue of a governor's veto. So I think it's a combination of the two.
Any one thing that you're particularly proud of, Senator Moe, in terms of what this legislature has been able to accomplish?
Well, I realize I'm being very repetitious, but I said at the start of the session what we should do is we have the resources to have permanent tax reductions, a rebate, investments in education, health care, and the environment, and a balanced transportation and bonding bill, and that's what we're going to end up with. So I think I'm reasonably pleased. There are a couple of things that I would probably have done different, but that's the nature of this process. There's give and take and compromise. So I think all in all, it will be a successful legislative session.
Last year at this time, pretty much everybody was declaring victory in terms of the tripartisan government arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
Still declaring victory?
Oh yes. I think everybody can walk away from this legislative session, which are the 2 years. Everybody can walk away from that, and I think the taxpayers of the state can feel, I hope they feel well served, the substantial permanent tax cuts as well as rebates and the right kinds of investments for the future of the state. So, yes, I think everybody can, if they want to write campaign literature, I think they can write it positively.
Do you regret at all suggesting that one-third, one-third, one-third split?
Not at all. Not at all. As a matter of fact, that's, I think, why we're here today getting this done. So, would I have used their thirds a little differently? Yes. But all in all, we're still going to end up with the same ratio I was talking about two-thirds of a permanent tax cuts, about a third on the investment side, and the rest of it will fall in place. So, no, in this business, you look at the end game, and the end game is the same versus had we done it a little bit differently. It's just a matter of trying to break things loose. like I said at the time, our unique political structure, I think, demands sometimes some unique solutions and actions.
Is it true that you're as wily as Steve Sligum, the House Speaker, has said you are? After all, he pointed out that you've, what, outlasted 8 or 9 House Speakers now.
I'm not very wily, I'll tell you that. Right now I'm a little tired, I got a cold, and like everybody else, I want to go home.
So. Thanks, Senator. Appreciate your coming
by. Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Senator Majority Leader Roger Moe joining us on what, for all practical purposes, is more or less the last day of the legislative session. As Senator Moe noted, there'll probably be a day set aside to consider veto overrides, but that will come next week. Today is the day when the full House and Senate are voting on all these big bills that you've heard about. Mike Mulcahy has joined me here at our broadcast table in the State Capitol Rotunda. We'll be joined throughout the midday broadcast by a series of key legislators to take a look at what's in those big bills. And we'll continue our coverage here from the Capitol in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on NPR is supported by Ecolab, dedicated to improving cleaning and sanitation standards for leading hospitality, healthcare, and food processing customers worldwide. On the web at ecolab.com.
Minnesota meteorologist Mark Seeley.
I like the springtime because of the return of the high sun, the long days, the fresh spring odors in the air. Even the farm odors are welcome to me.
Minnesota Timberwolf Malik Seeley.
I'm a fall guy. You know, I love the fall. You know, it's not too hot, it's not too cold. The weather's just right for me in the fall.
Different perspectives on Morning Edition, weekdays from 4 to 9.
With headlines from Minnesota Public Radio, I'm Greta Cunningham. Republican presidential candidate George W. Bush says he's enthusiastic about the fact that his former rival, John McCain, has formally endorsed his candidacy. The two met in Pittsburgh this morning. Relations between the two have been strained since the bitter primary race, and McCain acknowledged they still disagree on some issues like campaign finance reform. McCain says he's not interested in being considered as a running mate. Heavy rains are causing more trouble in northeastern Oklahoma. Evacuations are underway in two towns, and schools have been shut in three districts because of flooded roads and bridges. Parts of Missouri have also been hit hard by flooding. Heavy rains this weekend have caused tens of millions of dollars in damage in the town of Union. Dozens were left homeless, and two people were killed on flooded roads. Cooler weather is helping firefighters in New Mexico battle two wildfires. The governor says the state is a tinderbox. He declared a state of emergency yesterday. The fires have forced hundreds of people to evacuate their homes, and one of the blazes has virtually shut down the Los Alamos National Laboratory. Officials say all nuclear material and explosives are in fire-safe buildings. No major injuries are reported, and no homes have been burned. In regional news, Senator Paul Wellstone plans to talk to fellow Minnesota Senator Rod Grams today. Wellstone says he will ask Grams to drop legislation that Hmong advocates say could slow passage of a Hmong citizenship bill. Wellstone's bill is like the one the House passed last week. It waives the English language requirement for Lao and Hmong veterans who served with the CIA in the Vietnam War. Wellstone is concerned that a similar bill, authored by Grams, would require a House-Senate conference committee, and that could bog down the legislation for the year. A spokesman for Graham says the differences between the two bills is minor, and conference committee action would not be required. Hundreds of Hmong veterans demonstrated outside Graham's Anoka office yesterday to protest his bill. A forecast for Minnesota today calls for partly cloudy skies statewide. High temperatures today near 60 in the north to 70 in the south. At this hour, Duluth reports fair skies and 53 degrees. It's fair in Rochester and 56. And in the Twin Cities, fair skies, a temperature of 60 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
All right. Thank you, Greta. It's about 25 minutes now before noon. This is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Acton, along with Mike Mulcahy. We're broadcasting live today from the Rotunda of the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul. Minnesota legislators have been working very, very, very hard these last few days. They met over the weekend. They spent a lot of time yesterday trying to put together the details of all these big bills that we've been talking about these last several weeks: taxes, education, transportation, the bonding bill, that's the capital improvements bill. There's a social service spending bill. Lots of big issues have been negotiated, all the tiny little details. And now, today, House members and Senate members are going to be voting on those bills. straight up and down votes. Basically, after they debate, they can't amend these bills any further. And sometime, probably early tomorrow morning, we will have a good idea of just what's going to be law in the state of Minnesota, the tax rebates that we can look for, how much will be spent on education, and the rest. Mike, very briefly, as far as I know, only one of these big bills still has to be worked out, correct?
Yeah, I think so. They were just finishing up the bonding bill, as we were saying earlier. The other one that's still out there is what they call this supplemental spending bill, or the omnibus bill, or just the plain old garbage bill.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a lot of spending. It has human services spending, has agriculture, natural resources spending, and it has state government spending. And so it's a pretty big package, and it's pretty complicated. They threw a lot of things into it. Some of the key things that are holding it up appear to be the human services spending, and this is part of the $175 million that the Senate got, part of its share of the money.
Mm-hmm.
It wants to put some of that money into the senior drug program. This is a program to help seniors buy prescription drugs. They want to expand that a little to include some disabled people. They want to give a pay increase to nursing home workers and personal care attendants, about a 3% increase, and they want to do a couple other things. And at least as of this morning, when I talked to Senator Don Samuelson, who chaired the Senate side of that, he said that the problem was not so much in the first year of the spending the money, but as the future bienniums, in the future years, the costs really explode. And so they're trying to work within the budget to find money for that, and they were close, he said. So he thinks they will get that done at some point today in time to pass tonight.
Now, the other big issue that still has to be resolved is what to do with the profile of learning. That's the other half, the second half of the state's new graduation standard, the so-called high standards. House and Senate negotiators did reach a tentative agreement early this morning on a K-12 education funding bill. They had been talking all through the weekend, all day Monday, and well into this morning on a plan that essentially spends $187 million in the public schools. But despite all those talks, despite all those meetings, they still haven't decided what to do about the profile of learning. Minnesota Public Radio's Tim Pugmire was tracking those talks and filed this report early this morning.
After last week's three-way agreement on splitting the state's budget surplus, Senate DFL leaders promised most of their $175 million share would go to education. But even with the basic financial parameters set, House and Senate negotiators had plenty of disagreements to resolve. Talks nearly collapsed early this morning, and Republican Representative Alice Segrin harshly criticized her Senate counterpart, DFLer Larry Pogemiller.
You have had the wonderful privilege, and that no chair in the state has ever had, of being able to put together a K-12 bill that is your own design. You've been given $120 million to do that, and yet say, what else are you going to give us, House?
The bill approved by the House Senate Conference Committee includes $67 million of one-time funding. The rest is a permanent boost for schools. Money is included for special education costs, school building improvements, vocational education, teacher professional development, charter school lease aid, and high-speed internet access for schools. Segrin says some provisions will have an immediate impact on financially strapped school districts.
I think for the schools who are really doing a lot of budget cuts, things that are going to help them right away are the special education money that they're going to receive and the training and experience money, because basically that is money that allows their general fund to be freed up to spend, you know, money for their shortfall, to restore some of their program cuts, maybe rehire some teachers, that kind of thing.
Senator Pogemiller says he thinks the money directed toward teacher development will have a big impact on students.
We're providing significant dollars to allow teachers the time to collaborate among themselves and improve their teaching practices, and I think that'll be the most important thing we've done this year.
Charter schools came out winners in the bill. Conferees corrected a deficiency in the funding available to charter school leaders to lease buildings. Steve Dess of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools says the bill is a big victory for the students they serve.
Their facilities now can be adequate for education, and the teachers teaching there are going to be able to afford the books and be paid properly and not have to pull that money to pay for the facility. That's what they've been doing.
The biggest education stumbling block at the Capitol remains the profile of learning. The conference committee remains at an impasse on how to modify the Show What You Know high school graduation standards. The Senate has agreed to allow teachers and administrators to choose between an improved profile or the Back to Basics North Star standards. House negotiators want school boards alone to make that decision. Another disagreement remains over testing requirements. Senator Pogamiller says he thinks the two sides can reach an agreement.
If the House is unable to finally, you know, come to terms with doing a standards bill, the Senate and the governor have several strategies for pressing the issue further.
House and Senate negotiators met behind the scenes Monday working on a graduation standards compromise. It's unclear when the Profile of Learning Conference Committee will meet again. I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio.
Mike, any better idea when the conference committee is going to get back together and try to talk some more about the profile of learning?
Simple answer, Gary, I don't know. They were up late, in fact, early this morning, so it might be a while before they get back. And maybe we can find out as we go on in the program here.
Okay, good. Well, another big issue that legislators have been talking about is transportation. Highways, bridges, and to some degree, mass transit projects. And joining us now is Senate Transportation Chair Dean Johnson, who has spent his first session as a Democrat. Quite a bit different than being a Republican?
Not really. People still want good roads and bridges and the transit system. It's given us the opportunity to be involved in a conference committee as a co-chair and Representative Molnau, myself from the House. Someone asked just moments ago how we got along. In the last 2 weeks, we've never had a cross word. We just get along, and we put a bill together over the last 2 weeks, and last night all 10 conferees signed the bill, and we'll be taking it up on the House and Senate floor here, I'd say, in the next couple of hours.
It seems like those conferees who used to be in the other body get along a little better with the members of the House.
Well, having served there 4 years, we understand what it's like to be in the House. It's a fine institution, and so we have an appreciation for the House of Representatives. But we're excited about the bill that we have brought forward today for final vote. Essentially, it spends about $500 million from the surplus. And that surplus money will be used for roads and bridges and some for mass transit. And as we speak, the bonding bill is still being debated for the purposes of adding another $25 million from the governor's one-third portion that he did not use to buy down the license tab fees. But to give a perspective to our listeners, MnDOT typically spends $500 million annually for highway construction. Mm-hmm. And what our bill would do, if it becomes law, and we're hopeful that the governor will sign it, it would add another $500 million over the next 3 years. It would, in lay terms, be more aggressive in the planning and engineering and the purchasing of right-of-way and the completion of corridor development and bottleneck projects here in the metropolitan area as well as greater Minnesota. What is very unique about the bill, we split the money 50-50, 50% in the 7-county metro, 50% into greater Minnesota. Along with that, $39 million more for local bridges, another $30 million that goes to the counties and municipal streets, along with some port development assistance as well as regional railroad authorities. So we're hopeful that we're going to have a veto-proof bill. And that'll take, I believe, 91 votes in the House and 45 in the Senate. And up on the Senate floor this morning, many members have stopped by and are giving thumbs up, and so we're hopeful that that will, in fact, happen. But it's been, I would categorize it as the most aggressive funding bill in 20 years.
Governor Ventura's office, though, has indicated that a veto might be forthcoming because there isn't enough money in there for transit projects, that the bill is way too skewed, in their viewpoint, way too skewed toward highways and bridges and not nearly enough money for buses and
Well, last year was really transit's year. $73 million of general appropriations went to transit. Highways received nothing. Bridges received nothing. Also, in the matter of bonding, we do have $40 million for regional bonding authority here in the metropolitan area in another bill. And if all comes to fruition, there could be up to $50 million more. So that's $90 million. So that's why I'm talking about a very positive vote on the House and Senate so that we don't have a veto of this bill.
Long term, are you confident that there's going to be the money to continue this kind of aggressive construction schedule?
That's one of the problems. We'd like to have a dedicated source of revenue for highways and bridges and transit, and we're not quite there yet. And that's an issue for the future that we realistically have to work on.
Senator Johnson, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you very much.
Good talking with you. Senator Dean Johnson, who switched over, you'll recall, to the DFL party after serving, among other things, as the Senate Minority Leader, Republican Leader. He is now the Senate Transportation Finance Committee Chair. And the legislature is in the process of approving, as you heard, a transportation bill that contains way over $500 million for transportation projects. There's money in there was an attempt at one point during the session to repeal money for the Hiawatha light rail line. That was taken out of the bill, so full steam ahead for the Hiawatha light rail line. Lots of money in there for all kinds of projects around the state. Joining us now is the Speaker of the Minnesota House, Steve Swigum. And Mr. Swigum, still upright after all these hours. As I asked Senate Majority Leader Moe this, I'll ask you the same question. Is the train still running on schedule?
Yes, as far as the train, meaning the legislature.
Yes.
See, we've been involved in this light rail train controversy, too, and that's sometimes when we're talking about the train, we don't know which one. Now, Gary, it seems to be on schedule. Conference committees, a couple have wrapped up. We'll be coming forward with their reports within, the middle of the afternoon, and I think there are three other conference committees that are just determining the last language to put into the bills.
Now, this gets a little complicated, but I know you were fairly upset with what happened with this bonding bill and the governor's inclusion now in the bonding bill of money for the busway that would run from, downtown St. Paul out to the Mall of America. Is that correct?
That specific busway is not identified in the bill. What is identified in the bill is $25 million in 2001 and $19 million in 2002 as part of the money that was allotted to the governor for this one-third, one-third, one-third scenario for him to spend or reduce tax tabs or car license tabs with. It's not specified this busway, but it said four busways for acquisition for construction of a busway in the state. And I think that's two things, Gary, that and maybe it's too much inside baseball, but the fact that the governor is coming last minute in a bill that has had no hearings, no open public testimony, using the conference committee process, abusing the conference committee process. By the way, Gary, this same person who says they're so bad we got to have a unicameral legislature being abusing it, and then coming and basically retreating from what he said he would do with the money, which was sending it all to taxpayers by reducing tabs, now spending some of it, raises certain eyebrows and concerns.
Mm-hmm. And but it's going to be in there, right, Speaker?
Well, I've directed the conferees, Mike, to put it in the bill, that be an honor type thing, to honor the request of the governor. It's coming out of his one-third of the so-called pie, as unholy as that scenario is. Mike, some of the conferees are very, very reluctant to do so.
I asked Senator Moe what his trust level with the governor was. What do you think about your trust level of the governor and your caucuses?
It's not great. And the heels of last year, the vetoes of last year, after there have been certain promises, the commitments that have been made, coming forward this year, and understandably, my caucus has felt in many cases, the governor has somewhat either retreated or not been there to support our issues as we go along, and you know, many of our caucus members don't feel that there would be a real need of trust to the governor at this point.
Would this transit money in the bonding bill put it in any peril of not passing the
yes.
House floor?
Yes, for sure.
And you need like a supermajority to pass
81 votes, the bonding bill, because by constitution, when you place debt upon our children, when you incur debt in the state of Minnesota, it takes a supermajority, or in this case, 81 votes on the floor.
So that one may be up in the air yet.
Yeah, that's, I can't predict, Gary, whether that bill, without this influx of spending that was brought forward late last night to be placed in the bill, I would have told you that that bonding bill would have probably had 100 votes on the House floor, maybe more. But with this new development, it's certainly raised many, many concerns and many frustrations on the floor in relationship to not only the type of spending, but the process, when it came in, and what the governor is basically doing in trying to circumvent the process.
There were a fair number of members of your caucus who were, I think it's fair to say, pretty upset when the basic budget agreement was reached, because what that really meant was that there was no way you were going to get anywhere close to the kind of permanent income tax cuts that you had been pushing for. Have those hard feelings been smoothed over now? Everybody on the same page?
No, they've not been smoothed over. they're willing to accept a cooperation to live and fight another day. Generally speaking, the process theory of the one-third, 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 we think is very, very wrong. It takes it out of the legislative decision-making process. It takes it out of individuals who were duly elected by the people of the state. Gary, and the premise that some politicians have one-third of the people's money to decide what they want to do with without it being open to debate, without it being open to give and take, without it being open to compromise, that's absolutely wrong. So they don't feel any better about it, no. I think what they have resolved in their mind is the fact that in balance, 2 weeks from now, when people sit back and, you know, the dust kind of clears, we will look back at this session with what has come forward and said, we've been able to invest some money in roads and bridges, which is good. We've been able to invest some money with some needs in education, help our nursing homes, get a rebate, help farmers with reducing farm property taxes, and still have another permanent tax cut. So over the two-year period of time, Minnesota will have led the nation, in reducing the tax burdens upon our citizens. I think when the dust settles, that picture isn't too bad, Gary.
Before we wrap up here, and we have to stop here pretty soon, but I'm just curious, unicameral, is it going to come up for a full vote on or a vote on the floor of the House? I'm sorry.
They're voting as we sit right here now. On the House floor is a motion to take the unicameral bill, which came out of committee yesterday, mm-hmm. and to send it to the Rules Committee. If that motion prevails, obviously there's no time left of the legislative session for there to be a vote on it. So if that motion prevails to send it to Rules, you can consider it completely dead for the fourth time?
Fourth or fifth, who's counting?
And it won't come back late tonight.
I don't think so, not unless the governor wants to put it back in some other conference committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Appreciate
Thank
you.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Minnesota House Speaker Steve Swigum joining us as we continue our live broadcast here from the Minnesota State Capitol on what, for all practical purposes, is the last day of the Minnesota legislative session. Legislators, the full House, the full Senate are voting on all these big bills. We're taking a look at what's in those bills, talking to key legislators. Today here on Midday, we're going to break for the Writer's Almanac, and then we'll be back with more live coverage from the Capitol. Gary Acton along with Mike Mulcahy. Do join us in just a few minutes.
Sunday marked the first peaceful transfer of executive power in Russia, as Vladimir Putin was sworn in as Russia's president. While the political transition may have been relatively smooth, many challenges lie ahead as Russia enters the Putin era. I'm Juan Williams. We'll discuss Russia's decade of transition and her uncertain future on the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Here on Minnesota Public Radio.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, May the 9th, 2000. It's the birthday of poet Charles Simic in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, 1938. His family moved to Chicago after World War II when he was 11 years old. He said his poetry was most influenced by listening to American jazz, Sonny Rollins, and Charlie Parker. His book of prose poems, The World Doesn't End, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1990. It's the birthday of playwright Alan Bennett, born in Leeds in Yorkshire, England, 1934. He taught medieval history for a while at Oxford, was a member of the satiric review Beyond the Fringe, and has written plays for stage and television and movies since then. His big hit was The Madness of King George. His current play is The Lady in the Van. It's the birthday of poet Mona Van Dyne in Waterloo, Iowa, 1921, winner of the National Book Award, the Bullingen Prize, and the first woman to be made poet laureate of the United States. It's the birthday of novelist Richard Adams, born in Newbury in Berkshire, England, 1920, who started telling his daughters a story about a rabbit, from which came the book Watership Down. And it's the birthday of J.M. Barrie, James Matthew Barrie, born in Kirriemuir in Angus, Scotland, 1860. He was a friend of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. He wrote a book in praise of smoking, My Lady Nicotine, wrote many famous plays, but his work that endures down to our time was Peter Pan, 1904, which he created out of his own sadness and his longing for a happy childhood. His older brother died young, and his mother never got over it, and young James Barrie felt that she never loved him. He would hear her say that her only consolation was that the dead boy would remain a child forever. J.M. Barrie grew only to 5 feet, and he was always more comfortable around children. In the middle of his life, when his own marriage had failed, he sort of adopted a whole family, a couple and their 5 boys, and he liked to tell the boys stories. One was about how all infants can fly and how the baby of the family, whose name was Peter, went out the window every night to fly around the park. From these stories, he wrote The Little White Bird and then the play Peter Pan. The boy Peter, on whom the character was based, hated the fame that it brought him and threw himself under a train and killed himself. Here's a poem by Mona Van Dyne on her birthday, Caring for Surfaces. Birds build, but not I build, no, but wipe, time's wife, dipped in detergent, dish and chandelier, retrieve their glister, sopped kitchen floor reflowers, knife rubbed with cork unrusts, colors of carpet weave, cuffed with shampooer and vacuum, will reblush. Prints sprayed and scrubbed no longer peer but stare. Buffed silver burns, brushed plaster will gush hue at you. Tops soothed with cloth will clear. Cleansing the cloud from my windows, I let the world win. It comes in, and its light and heat heave the house, discolor, dim, darken my surfaces. Then once again, as for 40 years, my fingers must make them rouse. Round rooms of surfaces I move, round board, books, bed. Men carve, dig, break, plunge, as I smooth, shine, spread. A poem by Mona Van Dyne, Caring for Surfaces, from Letters from a Father and Other Poems, published by Athenaeum, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, May the 9th. Made possible by 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find more than 10 million used, rare, and antiquarian books on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Technical direction by Scott Rivard. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Regional broadcasts of the Writer's Almanac are supported by Marquette Banks, your community bank, offering a broad range of financial services for your business and personal needs.
News headlines are next, and then right after the news, it's back here to the Capitol for more legislative coverage. We have a cloudy sky, 60 degrees. FM 91.1, Minneapolis and St. Paul.